Howdy and welcome to Thin Air News with an Altitude from your High Country Public Radio stations. I'm John Kovash.
I'm Anne Beauvais. Howdy. This month we have a special on mining with reports from all over the Western Slope.
If you come up Pinus Creek Road out of Del Norte and you turn the corner and there it sits.
The scale of increase is like nothing we've ever seen before. It just goes right off the chart.
Just when you thought mining was dead in Colorado, the state is seeing a revival. Forget gold and silver. Steelmakers want molybdenum from Crested Butte. Power companies want clean-burning coal from Paonia. California wants the gas in the Piance Basin. Even uranium is being mined again. And once again, miners are dying in underground accidents. Between the miners and government mine cleanup crews, bulldozers are dozing, trucks are trucking, and paychecks are being passed out on Fridays. In this special, Thin Air reports from the Western Slope communities that bear the brunt of mining's impacts. We start with an update on Summitville, one of Colorado's remotest mines and considered the state's worst environmental disaster. Outrage over Summitville single-handedly spurred a round of reform of mining laws in Colorado and around the world. In 1986, modern cyanide heap leach mining for gold and silver began at Summitville. Environmental problems soon arose. In 1990, 15,000 trout were killed after stocking in nearby Terrace Reservoir, and trout were dying in private farm ponds. In 93, the Forest Service put up signs, "Don't drink the water." Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of gold and silver were extracted before Galactic Resources, the Canadian mining company, declared bankruptcy and abandoned the site. By current estimates, it will cost $120 million to clean up the mess. Back in May, work began on a three-year, $14 million interim cleanup. Meanwhile, study on how to restore the damage goes on among an army of public agencies. The EPA, State Health, Forest Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Bureau of Reclamation, and the U.S. Geological Survey.
Well, I think if you drove to the site, you can see it. And from a distance, it's startling because it takes up quite a bit of the vista. And if you come up Pinus Creek Road out of Del Norte and you turn the corner and there it sits. And it's impressive in its size and it's impressive in the beauty that surrounds it. There are deer on site. There are fox on site.
Camille Price is the Colorado Health Department's new on-site coordinator at Summitville. Price comes from Telluride and Red Mountain, where she was an overseer of the cutting-edge Iditarod mine cleanup. She is now dealing with an estimated 1,100 downriver residents who are directly affected.
Of course, they are concerned with the downstream water quality, as we all are, and understand the scope. The mine site is so big and so much land is disturbed that we really have to take a systematic approach and we can't do it all at once. And considering that the site is at an average of 11,500 feet, it's very deep snow, very long winters, very wet springs. We have a really short summer, so to speak, until we get into the heavy rain seasons. And so the vegetation that we are planting is slow in coming.
If the locals are impatient, it's because for a decade there have been no fish in miles of the upper Alamosa River, no fish in Iron Creek, Bitter Creek, Alum, Jasper, or Reitman Fork, and no fish in Terrace Reservoir, which supplies irrigation for 45,000 acres in the San Luis Valley. Studies have already found elevated metal levels in the livers of cattle, sheep, and mallard ducks, blamed on the bioavailability of heavy metals taken up by plants and crops drinking Alamosa River water. Water from some kitchen faucets was found to be violating federal standards. An estimated 1,400 private wells could be affected. Although health officials say the human health risk is low, the cleanup crew at the mine wears protective gear, drinks bottled water, and is required to have a good health and safety policy. Camille meal. Price says besides the long winters at altitude, there is the unique geology to contend with at Summitville.
It's a quartz-latite rock that, when mixed with water, becomes a very soft rock, and it dissolves easily. There's a lot of clay minerals in the rock. It affects mostly the transport of materials from one point on site to another. The roads will become very muddy under wet conditions, and you have to adjust haul patterns and rates of speed and how much you can get done in a day because the roads become muddy. It also affects, more so than in other locations, the amount of sediment control that needs to be in place while doing this work. So we have a lot of sediment basins that collect water, settle out the suspended solids, and then go into a bigger collection basin, which is then pumped into the water treatment plant for reduction of minerals.
The government scientists have to figure out how to permanently staunch the flow of tainted water out of the mine.
Do we need to continue to have a water treatment plant to treat the mine site drainage? Do we need to do anything with the mine water itself, which is now plugged up into the mountain? Do we need to release that water and treat it, or do we need to just leave it in place and monitor it? So the long-term plans for the site are still being investigated.
Downriver, the studies include more well sampling, toxicity tests, invertebrate assessments, and studies of stream flows and sediment. There is also talk on the regulatory level of downgrading the status of the Alamosa River to Class 2, which means no fish, and lowering the water quality standards. At Summitville, in the middle of 450 acres of vast, muddy moonscape, cleanup crews have to contend with the 44-acre cyanide heap leach bed, which is over 100 feet deep on a former creek bed. Price says the first job is to minimize further erosion.
And that includes surface reclamation of the mine disturbance, reestablishment of water drainage ways on site, and then stabilization of the disturbed land with revegetation. It includes establishment of drainage ways and water diversion ditches to have a designed location for water to flow in a controlled, in a protective manner, that is from erosion. So they're riprap lined or they're plastic lined, and they're sized for a 100-year storm event.
So far, 90% of the cleanup tab is being picked up by the feds. Colorado pays the rest and gets stuck with long-term monitoring and maintenance. With Ken Salazar, a San Luis boy, in the attorney general seat, hopes are being revived that the state can recover money from Robert Friedland, who by some estimates has made $400 million on mining elsewhere since he walked away from Summitville.
Come listen, you fellas so young and so fine, and seek not your fortune in a dark, dreary mine. It'll flow as a habit and seep in your soul till the stream of your blood is as black as
last month, owners of two polluting mine tunnels north of Rico were named in a multi-million dollar suit by the U.S. attorney. Two principals of the now defunct Rico Development Corporation are accused of improperly and fraudulently abandoning a wastewater treatment system, and for 5 years allowing heavy metals to flow from the Blaine and St. Louis tunnels into the Dolores River. The tunnels are part of the inactive Argentine mine. Defendant Wayne Webster, who now lives in Athens, Texas, says the tunnels are his property, but, quote, there is nothing to clean up. In 1994, Webster says he stopped treating the water after the Colorado School of Mines tested the St. Louis tunnel and found no minerals.
It's yellow because it's got calcium in it. There's no minerals and such coming out.
Webster says a dam he installed to stop pollutants from Blaine Tunnel was repeatedly taken down. He's given up on the dam and says EPA standards are too nitpicky. EPA attorney Eliana Sutton was not able to state the actual toxicity level of the tunnel water, but says that some pollutants do exist.
As far as the environmental harm to the river, we consider it to be pretty significant. The discharges from the mine, the abandoned mine, are ongoing, and the mine has been identified by both EPA and the state as a source of toxic pollutants, and it's impairing the water quality.
Sutton also believes there have been negative impacts on fish and humans, but couldn't quantify the impacts.
We have observed the usage of water from the treatment ponds at the facility being used for hot tubs by local residents. So people are actually, sitting and bathing in the water. We don't know the full impacts on human health.
The Division of Wildlife says the Upper Dolores fishery has been impacted by RICO mine waste for at least the last two decades. Mike Jafet, field biologist for the area, says the Dolores below RICO has to be heavily stocked with rainbow and brown trout fingerlings because there aren't as many fish as you'd expect. But the river does support some native species, including bluehead suckers and speckled bass.
Payday, payday, oh, payday. Payday at Coal Creek no more.
In San Luis, Colorado's oldest and poorest town, locals complain that the Battle Mountain Gold Mine, another abandoned mine, has ruined the water in Rito Seco Creek, the source for centuries of irrigation. Brian Bayhuth reports from Alamosa.
Donna Arthur is the enforcement attorney for the Environmental Protection Agency, District 8, based in Denver.
Last week, EPA sent a notice of intent to the state of Colorado, the Water Quality Division, letting them know that we're concerned about what appears to be happening at the San Luis mine on the Rito Seco, that based on what we know, we believe an enforcement action should be taken, and that if the state doesn't take appropriate action, then EPA will have to step up to the plate.
David Holm is the director of the Colorado Water Quality Control Division.
We have been involved in working closely with EPA and the Battle Mountain Gold Company, in addition to a citizens group that has visited with us that is from the town of San Luis.
Both state and EPA authorities premised San Luis officials and property owners at a meeting held in Denver on August 2nd of this year that the community's pleas for enforcement of clean water laws against Battle Mountain Gold Mine would be granted. But Joe Gallegos, San Luis rancher, board member of the Castilla County Conservancy District, and holder of the oldest water rights in Colorado, says that the state has dragged their feet on the cleanup and has made little more than rhetorical flourishes since the EPA became involved.
The state has been very reluctant to give us much help on these issues. We've had to plead with them many times in the past since 88 to deal with issues that we are concerned about with water. And I was specifically talking about the Division of Mining and Geology. And we just do not seem to get any response from them as concerned citizens, and it just doesn't seem like they're very concerned about what our water quality is here and what our issues are.
That's the sound of snowmaking guns blowing contaminated water into the air in an attempt to lower the water level in the mine's waste pit below that of the nearby Rito Seco Creek. The pit occupies what was once a rolling foothill and now is a multicolored stone wall with a contaminated 2.3 million gallon reservoir at its base. Joe Gallegos is unsure of the method of lowering the water level, not only because it wastes one of the valley's most precious resources, but that locals were not involved in the decision to use the evaporative method.
When they put up the spray guns, there was no public process that we went through to see if we liked their approach to this problem. We never were able to send comments about it as to whether it's going to work, and they just kind of left us hanging there, and they went ahead and did it anyway without really dealing with our issues.
Mike Long is the director of the Colorado Division of Minerals and Geology and describes the state of the cleanup.
As it stands right now, the company is under a board order that they're complying with. They have implemented We gave partial approval to a plan to start remediating the problem. That is to lower the water in the pit through an evaporative process. That is put in place and working. We are currently reviewing the second portion of their remediation plan. It has not been approved at this point, but it is under review. The company supplied the information we have requested, and we are doing our technical review right now.
Despite the seeming attention being given to the issue, no specific plan to clean up the mess has been made public. For Joe Gallegos in the Costilla County Conservancy District, the crux of the injustice lies in the burden that Costilla County taxpayers have to bear in fighting a multinational corporation that was paid $40 million taxpayer dollars not to mine gold near Yellowstone National Park.
Yes, the Conservancy is paying approximately $4,000 to $5,000 monthly, and it's going to get worse in bills to experts, anything that it, lawyers, anything it takes to help this issue, to clean this mess up. We're very concerned about it, and it's just sad to see that the poorest county in Colorado has to fight on a multi-million dollar corporation because the state just won't take their take the initiative to enforce the laws.
For Thin Air, this is Brian Behuth in Alamosa, Colorado.
Dig my life away. Precious metal is hard to find, precious metal is hard to find. Down in the hole and down in the mine, I dig my life away, oh, and I dig my life away.
This month, the Cypress AMAX Mining Corporation began a courtroom battle with the town of Crested Butte, High Country Citizens Alliance, and the Western Slope Environmental Resource Council. Tony Todd reports from Crested Butte.
At stake, water. In 1996, Cypress AMAX filed a claim with the state of Colorado requesting the right to divert 30 cubic feet of water per second from the Slate River just south of the Obie Joyful Trailhead. The company intends to use the water to extract some 6,000 tons of molybdenum, or moly ore, each day from Mount Emmons. Mark Heller is secretary of the board for High Country Citizens Alliance, also known as HICA. He is also a practicing attorney in Crested Butte.
In Colorado, you have to get permission to use water. In order to get rights to the water, you have to show that you're going to put the water to a beneficial use, that you can and will put the water to a beneficial use, and that you are not speculating in order to convince the state of Colorado that you need that water. In this case, the town of Crested Butte and HICA and Reserc object to AMAX's application because we don't think AMAX intends to use the water in a reasonable amount of time. We think that they are speculating.
For all parties in the case, the stakes are high. Securing water rights will take Cypress AMAX one step closer towards setting up full mining operations at Mount Emmons. Denial of those rights will force the company to submit another application. If the current application is approved, Cypress AMAX will begin construction of a pipeline and reservoir system.
They have proposed to divert the water just south of the Obie Joyful Trailhead, which would mean the construction of a pumping station right there. They have proposed to build an underground pipeline from Obie Joyful Trailhead around the flank of Mount Emmons, down the Slate River Valley, up Mount Emmons to the mine site. So that would mean a noisy pumping station just south of the trailhead. That would mean construction through either the wetlands or on the flank of Mount Emmons. It may also mean that they'd be entitled to build their three reservoirs, one of which is at Elk Creek, which is a mile or two up Kepler Pass Road. They have two other reservoirs that they plan to build between Carbon Peak and Axtell Peak. Currently, those are free-flowing creeks and fairly pristine areas, and they'd be dammed up with, I think, dams in each case are at least 190 feet high, and that would mean an inundation of the creeks where the dams would be located.
Jerry Danny is Vice President of Environmental Affairs for Cypress AMAX and manager of the Mount Emmons project.
It's a project that can be developed, recognizing the sensitivities of the area, and I'm very aware of that, having grown up in that area and still have family in that area. But it's the type of project, I think, that can be addressed or address the environmental concerns at the same time.
Danny explains that the mine would also bring relatively high-paying jobs to Gunnison County while providing his company with a source of moly. The burden of proof lies with the mining company. Cypress AMAX will be asked several questions to prove that they are not speculating about the future success of the operation and that they can and will put the water to beneficial use. Will AMAX be able to divert water from the slate? What effect will low snow years have on the plan? How will the diversion affect plants and fish, both upstream and down? Have they secured the necessary rights of way? Is 6,000 tons of ore per day feasible? For how long? How will they guarantee that toxic chemicals used at the mine will not drain into the Crested Butte watershed? Despite this burden, the company appears confident that it will eventually prevail.
We have a good case, and again, would want to remind everybody that what we're applying for is a conditional water right, and by that I mean we would only be able to withdraw water during peak flow or storm, or rather spring snowmelt runoff. It's really just the first step in a very long process toward developing Mount Emmons. But again, it's only the right to draw water during probably 1 to 2 month period of the year.
According to a recent report in the Gunnison Country Times, the company's application for water rights has drawn opposition from a number of organizations, including the Bureau of Land Management, the U.S. Forest Service, and Crested Butte Mountain Resort. Still, Cypress AMAX persists. The battle rages on at enormous cost. This is Tony Todd reporting for KBUT.
Nice shape woman is hard to find. Nice shape woman is hard to find. Rolling down the mountainside. And I dig my life away. Oh, and I dig my life away. Dig, 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 dig.
For years, the coal towns north of Paonia have seemed quaint to many passing motorists, with the big TV dishes in every small yard and the pro-union placards lashed to the sides of old garages. But things might be changing very quickly. Adam Burke reports from Paonia.
Social conflict over coal mining is nothing new to the North Fork Valley. In the late 1970s, the national energy crisis spurred an expansion of coal production, which at its peak in 1981 reached 2.7 million tons a year. This coal boom divided communities in the region. Local miners equated high wages and year-round work in the mines with financial stability, while other citizens raised concerns about the impacts of unrestrained growth. The results were a decade of hostile conflict. When coal busted in the mid-80s, the industry's critics appeared justified. This decade has seen another resurgence in coal production, but the boom is altogether different. Recent advances in technology have made coal extraction a rapid, efficient, and automated business. Meanwhile, the 1990 Clean Air Amendment is forcing utilities across the country to drastically cut emissions. Most accomplish this by switching from cheap, high-sulfur Appalachian coal to more expensive, cleaner Western coal. As clean air regulations continue to be phased in, the demand for North Fork coal will only increase. The effect of these factors on the market is plain. In 10 years, the volume of coal production in the North Fork Valley has quadrupled to 10 million tons annually, and that figure could jump to 15 million by next year.
The scale of increase is like nothing we've ever seen before. It just goes right off the chart. And that creates all kinds of impacts for this community.
Steve Hinchman directs the Western Slope Environmental Resource Council. Once the council had identified these expansive trends, it was time to demand an accounting from the federal agencies issuing permits.
All these expansions were approved without any analysis of what the impacts would be. And about 10 months ago, we challenged the BLM's authority to issue permits without studying how eightfold increase in coal production would affect the valley. Everything from lights and noise to wildlife to railroad impacts, none of those issues had been analyzed, and the BLM was just handing out permits like lollipops. So we forced them to start over and to look at the cumulative and site-specific impacts of the proposed increase in coal production.
Meanwhile, Hinchman's organization and other citizens' groups were addressing expansion plans permit by permit. Bowie Resources Unlimited is one of three mines operating in the North Fork, and its pending permit for a new mine would count for a 5 million ton annual increase beginning next year. Opponents planning to appeal the application this coming October have a list of concerns. These points include the potential risk to irrigation water in the area and Bowie's plan to transport coal along state highways using 1,000 trucks a day. The opposing groups were also asking Bowie to reclaim its previous site, commit to a limit on annual coal production, and work with the other two mines in the valley on mitigating the impacts of increased train traffic. Over the past year, the forthcoming Bureau of Land Management review and inevitable appeals to Bowie's permit were adding to local tensions. But last month, Bowie surprised its critics when it agreed publicly to all five provisions. Bowie mine manager Bill Baer explains that coming up with a plan to address the concerns has been labor-intensive.
We listened to those concerns. We weren't in a position to do anything about them when they were brought up, but we have been working diligently on those to resolve those issues. Why now? Because we've gotten to a point in our process that we can bring these things forward as a package.
In return for these concessions, Bowie is asking that its permit not be appealed in October. If the permit goes through, the company will build a new train loadout, thereby eliminating any need for trucks on the highway. But Greg Hunt, another Bowie administrator, says there are still details to resolve before any deal can be finalized.
There's still some challenges for sure. You know, putting in a train loadout is not an easy thing. And it must be pointed out that all of these matters that we brought forward are contingent on us being the successful bidder on the Iron Point lease. If we're not successful bidder on that, we would not have the funds to go ahead and do any of this.
Steve Hinchman agrees.
We've been through booms here before, and we've had companies desperate to get their production online make all sorts of promises that were never fulfilled. We've learned to be careful, and the devil will be in the details, the enforcement agreements, and the quality of the work that goes into this. We set a deadline, the end of September. If the promises don't work out, we're still in a position to work the regulatory angles on both the state and the federal permits.
Still, both sides are cautiously optimistic, and the success to date is a testament to the goodwill and understanding of each. To a point, Steve Hinchman is even willing to highlight the value of coal mining in the North Fork Valley.
This is some of the cleanest coal in the United States. It's high BTU, it's low sulfur content, it's low moisture content, low ash. It's also mined deep underground with relatively minimal surface impacts. In other words, if you're going to mine and burn coal, this is the coal to burn, and this is the place to mine it, and this is the method to mine it. So it's a net environmental gain for the country in terms of air quality, water quality, and minimizing surface impacts to wildlife and water resources. But all the same, you have to mine it in a way that's environmentally and socially responsible to the local community. And that's what we've been fighting for. We're not opposing coal mining per se, but rather the impacts of the proposed mines.
The agreement could be formal and binding by the end of September. Reporting from Paonia, Colorado, I'm Adam Burke.
Thanks once again for listening. Thin Air is a project of the High Country Community Radio Coalition. You might be listening to KRZA Alamosa, KAJX Aspen, KGNU Boulder, KDNK Carbondale, or KBUT Crested Butte,
KZMU in Moab, KVNF in Paonia, KPCW in Park City, KRCL in Salt Lake City, or KOTO in Telluride.
Thin Air is funded by your local public station and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.